Interview with Candine, Jackson, Mississippi, March 28, 1974. Not for attribution. Transcript to be sealed for 10 years. Ken, why don't you tell me just how did you get interested in running for Congress?
Well,
what all transpired from that?
Two or three things happened. First thing was that I got interested in some problems associated with housing for the poor. And looking into it, I found out that the chairman of the Republican Party was involved in the housing business. And had worked effectively and used his position as chairman of the Republican Party, Clark Reed, to get the appraisals for FHA housing changed from an average of 10,500, 12,500, up to 14,500 to 16,500, roughly $3,000 to $4,000 a unit, and then turned around and sold 990 units to FHA.
This being Farmers Home Administration.
Yeah, Farmers Home Administration housing lot, you know, to low-income people. He did this by changing, he upped the appraisals by two or three methods. Number one, just on some of them, the footage went up. But also, he started figuring instead of the inside footage on a house, he started figuring it on the outside footage. He also changed the way you figure the heated and non-heated space. He also changed the way you figure the cost of driveways and culverts and that kind of thing. Also, in the Democratic administration, a housing unit included, you know, bathroom fixtures, and it included a stove and a refrigerator and a fan and other kinds of utilities in the house, like, you know, towel racks and that kind of stuff. But under Clark Reed's formula, a house is essentially a shell. And then he added on the cost of the stove, the refrigerator, the bathtubs, the sinks, that kind of indoor plumbing, that kind of stuff. And, you know, of course, the poor pays for this. So I got involved and interested in how the Republican Party was conducting itself mainly in Mississippi, mainly through that. And then I had a guy who was been a key Republican for years, Bert Yerger, to tell me that in 1968 that John Mitchell bugged the Mississippi delegation and kept control of the delegation through this bugging process, and then used the Mississippi delegation as a cornerstone around which to swing the election away from Reagan or anybody else over to Nixon.
Just a minute, Mr.
So, and he said then that Mitchell went around and bragged about it. Well, then you got Fred LaRue, a Mississippi Republican, involved in the Watergate thing.
I'm sorry.
So, you know, what I saw rather quickly was that the Mississippi Republican Party was an elitist group of corrupt politicians. So I went to work trying to get a Democrat candidate to run against Thad Cochran in the 5th district. I mean, in the 4th district, which is my district.
Before we get into that, let me ask you a few more questions on that background, on the Clark Reed thing. And Clark Reed was able to do this because you had a Republican-appointed state FHA director who was in collusion with him. Is that correct or not?
Yeah, it's worse than that. What happened was that a deal was made that patronage would remain with Senator Eastland and Stinnison, Mississippi. Eastland didn't want to have...
This was in 68?
Yeah, right.
Deal between whom?
Deal primarily between the White House and Eastland. And Eastland did not want to have to deal directly with the Republicans because this would get him in trouble with his own seniority and his own party. You see, he was at that time subject to some sort of vote as to whether or not he should have seniority, right? Okay. His seniority is being challenged by the loyalists. All right. So an arrangement was made whereby Fred LaRue would come to Washington. And Fred LaRue was an acceptable Republican to Jim Eastland. Jim Eastland was a friend of LaRue's father. Okay. So LaRue's role was to be a courier back and forth between the White House, the Republican administration, and Jim Eastland, in order to keep Jim from getting in trouble with his own party, okay? All right. A part of the deal was that the White House would have, you know, support from Eastland, and that Eastland would in turn maintain, just a minute, to cut it off, just a minute. Oh, well, anyway, Eastland, you know, was to be supportive of the administration, and in turn for this, he was to help maintain his patronage. Eastland's machinery has functioned with three different, what you might call underpinnings. The first underpinning, of course, is the judicial system in that he's appointed all the judges. Second is that he's had strong control over the Board of Supervisors, which is the county form of government. And the third structure that he's used has been the Farmers Home Administration, which is important in a rural state because it controls farm allotments, it controls water associations, land banks, farmers loans, housing programs, those kinds of things. Well, Clark Reed broke the agreement by demanding that he be given the control of Farmers Home Administration because of the key role that he had played and the Mississippi Republican Party had played in getting the Nixon nomination. So he was able to wrestle away from Eastland the directorship of the Farmers Home Administration. What he did was he appointed Jeppe Barber, who had been the Republican mayor of Yazoo City, a young man about 30 years old. Then he took Jeppe Barber's brother, Haley Barber, and made him executive secretary of the Mississippi Republican Party. So you had that nepotism function in there between the party and Farmers Home. And what was happening before you get Farmer Home Association loans approved, you had to go to the executive secretary, and he in turn would pass it over to his brother. All right, on the other hand, Billy Munger, who's Clark Reed's close associate, and was treasurer of the state party, and played a key role in the National Creek Organization, Billy Munger appointed his brother-in-law as director of HUD, another housing project, and appointed a second brother-in-law to head up the Veterans Administration properties appraisal. So you see, they had two kinds of nepotism with a conflict of interest, the conflict of interest being Clark Reed being in housing and then having this kind of involvement and control of Farmers Home Administration. Is that what you'd ask?
Yeah. You know exactly how it worked. Or Clark Reed, what? Did he construct houses?
Clark Reed did this. He bought 50% of a modular construction company in Marks, Mississippi. Clark Reed held a press conference and announced when he bought into this modular construction company.
You know the name of it?
Well, it goes by two or three names. One of the names it uses is Pacific Homes. Another name it uses is Modular Construction. What they do is they build prefab houses. Now, the second part of that deal is that they manufacture the prefab houses. He also has a company called Rattle and Snout, which has another name of Reed and Joseph that erects these houses. So what he does is he has Mr. Joseph to handle the loans through Farmers Home Administration. So they handle the loan. They have their attorney do the closing out, attorney that they pick, really. They have an insurance man that already has got a pre-worked up insurance plan, and that happens to be Wirt Yerger. They then produce the house, fabricated house, then they erect it. Plus, they also oftentimes develop the land that the houses go on. And that's essentially the way it works.
And in order to get the FHA financing, it has to be approved, right?
Right, right. All of these are low-interest FHA finance houses. You have houses that would cost $65 or $70 to people a month over a 30-year period.
But FHA has to approve the construction, approve the loan, approve the qualifications of the borrower, and so forth. So.
Yeah, right. Some of these houses that normally would cost $60-$65 a month to low-income people are there now paying $85 and $90 because the appraisals were kicked up $3,000 or $4,000. Clark Reed is under investigation by a government operations committee, a subcommittee of the House. Bill Alexander from Arkansas was involved in it. He's under investigation for housing he does in Arkansas as well as housing in Mississippi. The issue of housing just symbolizes what they've done in the Republican Party in Mississippi. They really were people who did not know the difference in conflict of interest and what I'd call graft and, you know, what really borders on outright stealing and they really didn't know the difference in, you know, gaining political advantage from patronage and unethical practices or conflict of interest. Just good use of political patronage. And they've made poor people check off on petitions before they could get water associations. They've made people who do VHA appraisals and housing appraisals contribute $30 a month into the party, $15 into the local treasury, and $15 into the state treasury. It's just been an attempt to finance a Republican Party out of the federal treasury.
Okay, so now with that background, and you're playing a role in getting this exposed, right? Did the TV station do anything on it?
Yeah, the TV station did some things on it, but mainly it was a story also that was carried nationally. Jack did it, Jack Nelson, and it ran the Washington Post on the front page as well as other places. But the sad thing about it was, even after all this was done, Clark Reed was able to take a position of arrogance and just ignore it all. So I felt that, you know, if it couldn't be handled through the press effectively, then you got to deal with it in some other fashion. So I decided one arena in which to deal with this issue was to make a race against the Republican legislatures and make these issues the issues of the campaign.
Okay, and then what, you go to, you have contacted some of Eastland's people?
Eastland's people were interested in this because Clark Reed had double-crossed the senator.
Right.
With the directorship of the Farmers Home Administration. And it also happens that there's a close link between the Eastland people and the regular Mississippi Democrats. I, of course, am a loyalist and been involved in a loyalist. I'm essentially a Kennedy Democrat. Stood somewhere between the Freedom Democrat Party and the Loyalist, with my closer ties actually being to the Freedom Democrat Party. But there was agreement with some of the Eastland guys and the regular Democrats with me that we should expose Clark Reed and Betty Monger, and that we should run Democrats against the two incumbent Republicans, and that the issue should be the issues that I talked about. Now, it turned out that we weren't able to come up with anybody that really wanted to run that was a moderate type of Democrat that could also bring together the regulars on the one hand and some of the black Democrats on the other. So out of that void, I decided that perhaps I should take a shot at it. So I am not the choice, the leading choice of anybody. I got strong support in the black community, but you know, lukewarm support, I'd say, among the white lawyers. And I have moderate support from the regular. If, you know, the qualifying deadline is a week from tomorrow. If a good moderate candidate would come forward and run, I still would back out. But it does not look like that's going to happen.
And have the regulars indicated to you that they will support you?
Tom Liddell, who is the chairman of the executive committee of the regulars, I have not done anything whatsoever in relationship to my candidacy without his approval. From the beginning until tonight, I've done nothing without his approval.
Where is Eastland's, you said, talk about Eastland's three sources, basic sources of strength. What is his hold over the supervisors? Or is that even poorly phrased?
Well, you know, the supervisors are the county government. The county government always relates back to the, you know, it gets involved with the judges. The county government gets involved again with the Farmers Home Administration. Those things are interlocked.
It's simply that supervisors have enough relationships with Washington federal agencies, and Eastland is the man that they go through.
That's right.
And he gets it done for them.
Patronage issue. That's right. Supervisor wants a water association, Eastland gets it. That kind of thing. Appointment of U.S. Marshals has been important, too.
In what way?
Well, just the continuing role that they play, you know, in the various districts among the county governments. Somehow or another, Eastland has not always involved himself very strongly in congressional politics. And if he you know, gets more actively involved in this one, I'm certainly sure it'll be because of the Reed Munger thing. He has a great deal of dislike for Munger because Munger called him. Munger said that Jim Eastland was a great detriment to the state of Mississippi.
Eastland's a very sensitive person, isn't he?
About what people think about him, right?
And how about the Carmichael race against Eastland? Does that fit into the picture also?
Well, not with me necessarily. I'm familiar with that.
Reed stayed out of that, though, didn't he?
No.
Was
he was with Carmichael.
He was with Carmichael?
Behind the scenes.
So that just adds fuel to the fire insofar as
right.
Eastland is concerned. Now, how about the fact that Cochran and Trent Lott won? Does that concern the Democratic regulars? Would they be behind you in part because they perceive Republicans and Republican victories basically as a threat to them?
Well, certainly. Clark Reed is he's a real operator. And using the manipulation of the federal programs as he is to bolster up the treasury of the state party, with the two senators in our state being elderly men, this state could conceivably, in 6 years, be a solid Republican state. There's no question about that. You got Eastland, who's, 70? Got Stennis, who's 70? Or thereabouts. So these men are in their late years of political office. have the Republicans gaining some seats around in the municipal elections. You have the Republicans making more serious races in the Congress and in the gubernatorial campaign probably this next time around. And
are some of these ambitious state Democratic officials likely to switch to Republican Party and then run for something like the U.S. Senate?
No, I think that's about over. See, it is true that the happenings in Watergate and the whole issue of Fred LaRue, it threw a damper on that.
How does Fred LaRue fit in, and what effect does his role in Watergate have in Mississippi politics?
Republicans try to play it down, but the money people who support candidates are aware that Fred LaRue is very deeply involved in the whole thing. See, John Mitchell was the key to a lot of the development of the Mississippi Republican Party. He handled the bonds. Mudge firm handled the bonds for the Litton industry down here. And Mitchell had a lot of relationships into Mississippi through Governor Paul Johnson and through Eastland. So the Republicans really had everything lined up for him in the state and could have garnered a great deal of power when Eastland passed on. Except, the Watergate thing turned out. And their real length, their real strength, is the culprit. So it's a different ball game.
So in effect, Watergate may have had as much effect on the Republican Party in Mississippi as in any southern state because of LaRue's involvement.
And the close ties with Mitchell.
That's right. And of course, the Litton Industries thing with Roy Ash. Also presumably closely connected with Mitchell and with Mississippi because of the shipyard. So you're saying that whole situation has gotten so messy that any ambitious Democratic regular politician doesn't want to touch it?
Whereas it might have been a viable alternative for him to switch 2 years ago, it's not a very viable alternative now. Now people would say that they support the president, but that doesn't mean they support Republican Party politics. You follow me?
Well, the Mississippi Republican Party, unlike the other southern state Republican parties, has gotten itself involved in the situation.
Yeah.
Because of Clark Reed's involvement and Fred LaRue.
That's right.
Was LaRue considered a Mississippi Republican before he went to Washington?
The story is
known at all in Mississippi?
The story is that LaRue Sr. went to the federal prison out of Texas for some grabs in the oil business, siphoning off of oil. When he got out of prison, he brought his two sons and came to Mississippi, Ike LaRue Jr. and Fred LaRue. Ike went Democratic and Fred went Republican. And the point of that was that since they were in the oil business, they needed to have a functionary in each party. So they're not party loyalists either way. It's merely a matter of convenience for their oil business.
Had Fred LaRue played an active role in the Republican Party in Mississippi before he went to Washington? A publicly active role?
Yes, he did.
Did he hold any party position, anything like that?
I think he was national committee man at one time or something like that. Yeah. His contacts were with Condi's.
If you were to win this thing, where would that leave? What effect would that have on the merger problem between the loyalists and the regulars? Wouldn't you then, in effect,
that's my second reason for being in it. Wouldn't that be in effect to be what?
You'd be in a position to play the role of putting it together.
Well, I don't think any one person would play the role of putting it together. But I certainly would.
Well, to put it together, isn't there going to have to be one person that both sides trust? Basically,
so.
Who is also somebody who can mediate and negotiate?
I think so. That's right.
All right, you've got experience and background in mediating and negotiating, right?
Well, I do that, but there's another thing that you need to know. The new Democrat rules and regulations are as pointed toward inclusion as the Miami process was toward exclusion. In other words, while they are written to try to ensure minority participation and women and those kinds of things, Daley would never be excluded. Something would have been worked out to include Daley, and under the new regulations, Daley would have been included in. I think what happened at Miami was what I call politics of suicide. The other thing is that the Democrat National Committee, and this I don't want to be told, Democrat National Committee was in the state this past December, and it did not contact the loyalists. It contacted the regulars. Plus, while they deal on a routine basis with Aaron Henry, Strauss also on a regular basis contacts and works with Tom Riddell, chairman of the regulars. And the regulars have been told that they not only will have their day in court, but that since they are the ones who elect office holders, they will be involved in a very serious and very important way in the next convention. Now, I know those are generalizations, but those are generalizations that I think are going to be worked out in specific form. Mississippi delegation, I do not think at the next convention is going to be an issue of a fight that divides the convention.
Do you think the merger will be accomplished by then?
Yeah.
Most people we talk to. All right, you got pretty close to the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And where are all those people now, and what are they doing?
The Klan?
Yeah.
They're all still around. They're not doing anything. And the reason they're not doing anything is because every act of the Klan since 1968 in the state of Mississippi has been initiated by a provocateur on the payroll of the FBI. The governor will tell you this. And the Klan's still very much around in terms of people's sentiments, but they're not actively organized because the organizations are shot through and through with provocateurs and informants. Democrat during the time that they were having all the fuss in Mississippi over the Head Start program, and they were trying to get some of them killed off and all of that. Shriver told me himself.
Just during John Bell Williams' administration?
Yeah, I think that's when it was. It would either have been Paul Johnson or John Bell Williams, probably the Paul Johnson administration. Told me that he was over, Shriver told me that he had gone over to the White House for something, and that he met John Stennis coming out. And said, Senator Stennis said, well, Sergeant, said, you'd never guess what I was over here for. And he said, well, what were you over here for? He said, I was trying to get more funds appropriated for Head Start. And Shriver just used that, you know, to say to me that while there was a lot of hell raised about the Head Start programs in Mississippi, that we should not be under any illusion as to what our senators were doing. That's all. And Shriver was very pleased with, you know, Stennis was doing that.
But Stennis pretty much consistently voted against OEO funds, didn't he?
Probably did. Same way with Eastman. Eastman used to tell us, there's some of these things that I've got to vote against, but you understand that I've already done more work prior to the time the vote's taken to make sure we get what we want than anybody's one vote will mean. That was Eastman's position on OEO from the beginning.
In other words, he just felt he couldn't safely vote for it. Yeah. In Mississippi.
Yeah. He worked with Ted Kennedy on it.
How do you view Eastland?
I don't. I tell you something off the record. Eastland people told me yesterday that they didn't know what John Bell was wanting to run for. They assumed it was governor again. But whatever it was, that he had men already out riding the street, riding the roads, actively organizing.
And statewide?
Yeah. And that John Bell had one of the most effective organizations in the state. And that even though he's not in office, that it's held together.
Is it a different organization from Eastland's organization?
Right. Yeah. You see, under Eastland's organization, it splits up three or four ways. It really does. You got people who are Waller people, and you got people who are John Bell people. And then you got folks who are sort of J.P. Coleman people. I've had to be very careful about that because I find people who are loyal to Eastland but who don't support Waller. I find people who are loyal to Eastland as a senatorial candidate but support Sullivan at the gubernatorial level. And see, that's a strange mixture. But I think John Bell's he's going to try to come back.
Is he interested in running for the Senate?
Could be. I don't think John Bell get elected Senate. Might get elected governor.
Why could he get elected governor and not to the Senate?
Well, I think Mississippi people feel a little bit differently about who they're going to send to Washington as senator. They want to send somebody to Washington who at least has the potential of amassing power. And they know that John Bell's age and health and just who he is would not qualify him to amass power. Do you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason I don't think they're elected for Senate.
Also, wouldn't you like to have a stronger opposition in the Senate, right?
Well, there'll be a whole bunch of folks. Yes. Bill Waller will be in whatever Senate race there is.
Would he win?
He might. He might do that. The Hedermans, who in a lot of ways don't get identified with politics, will get involved in that one. They get involved in senatorial politics. They get involved in gubernatorial politics.
They opposed Waller and lost.
That's right. See, this is an example of this Eastland faction that splits. Eastland elected Waller. Okay? The Hedermans elect Eastland. But the Hedermans opposed Waller.
But they still supported Eastland.
Right. One of the Eastland guys told me yesterday, he said it was funny as hell. He said that he found himself sitting down with one group of people in support of Eastland. And then he found himself of that group splitting in half on gubernatorial campaigns, and that he was opposing half of them on gubernatorial campaign, but yet working with them on senatorial campaign. And he said it was just very strange for everybody concerned.
Someone told us the last time that Eastland supported a losing candidate for governor was 1955.
Probably true. Eastland does not have the power to elect a mayor.
And since 1955 has not openly supported a candidate for governor.
Mm-hmm. But Eastland does not have the power by himself to elect a man. But what he does is he has the power to make the difference. You follow me? So he always waits to see how things line up. And he picks his man very carefully. And he makes the difference. And it's still a right-wing vote. Includes a network that's in a Klan.
End interview with Ken Dean. No more transcription. This tape.